Is Jason Nebro code meander? I'm talking about poverty. Did I say I'm Jason Nebro, Mrs. Code Meander? I did. Poverty and UBI and how I feel about it. Now, I talked about this a little bit, the personal stuff, so I'm probably going to rehash some things, but hopefully not too much and stay on topic. It's floundering around, which I tend to do, especially when I don't have scripts in front of me. Anyway, so you get full core Nebro here. Oh. Let's talk about poverty first. You know what? I've never been poor. I haven't had much money for reasonable portions of my life, but I've never been poor. And I find that that my own personal definition of poverty has grown, expanded. A whole lot of the media today is about the hell of poverty. And can I be honest? I think it is way overblown. Not having much money to take care of things is interesting. When Lisa and I were poor, when Lisa and I were young, we didn't have much. When our kids started coming, Lisa stopped working, and she was doing just minimum wage work. Lisa came from a working class background. Both of her parents did working class jobs. Her father was a milkman. And her mom did a few different things. Either she was what would be called a shop girl, or she would, do Avon or something like that. Something that a homemaker would do. She didn't spend a ton of time as a homemaker. Anyway. So she came from that kind of a background, and that's how she kind of is. The jobs that she has had have mostly been quasi-minimum wage-ish jobs. Unskilled, for the lack of a better term. Although she's got great skills, she just never, she didn't go out to go and do anything better. And that's interesting, and hopefully okay. Anyway, I got off my mission, did some menial work for a little while, started working on college. First, I went to college to basically be a preschool teacher. And the sad part is, That's a quasi minimum wage job, but it was to get the kind of skills to run a daycare center. Although to be honest, I think childcare is a really bad industry. It's really hard to make more money. You can't innovate. You can't scale very well. It really doesn't work very, it's labor intensive by nature. So anyway, so we were poor as church mice. And, but I got enough credits in a couple of ways that after I graduated, I could do a few more things. And I went into, like the WIC program into nutrition because I had to take some nutrition classes. I got my ultimate degree was in home economics, and there's good reason why this is not a a very interesting field, is because it doesn't really, you know, they talk about all the jobs you can do, and most of the jobs that you can end up doing have very, very little to do with the actual study of home economics. The most successful person I ever met in the field of home economics was a nice lady, I felt, named Cheryl Bourne, and she had a public television show that got a little bit of cachet out there. And she hosted this show, and she would bring in people, and they would go, and it was on, she was kind of a Martha Stewart sort, not quite, but, you know, what she was, and this was one of the big jobs that you would tend to go for, she was a county extension home economist sort, kind of an ultra one of those, which is like, you know, your home ec teacher in high school, which is really where the whole field is gone. So, you know, I was never really doing, I did it for a year, but it was futzy at best. Doing home economics, I had no interest in it. I don't care. It was just something I did. I did child development, and it really ended up kind of saying, "Ah, I don't really want to get involved in that." And I got into running them, and it really, you know, it was definitely a career choice I could have made. I was getting some more money. It was going up. I was becoming a low-level manager of it was getting to be nonprofits. And I still got the credentials to technically do such a thing to make people think well of me that way. But I was more of an information type. It was really early in the information field. I wasn't a scientist, and I never have gotten around to doing the science part of it. I futz around with it a little bit. This isn't about me. This is about poverty. The really big difference between people who are poor and people who are not, from a poverty standpoint, is what they are willing to do. Most poverty comes from, I have to be honest, it mostly comes from either being incapable, which too many people try to be incapable, or just being flat lazy, or falling into the trap of becoming lazy, which I think is probably more accurate than even being incapable. Some people just are incapable, but that's a relatively small proportion of human beings. If you hustle, and you don't have to hustle much, I don't think I've been much of a hustler myself. I've always been in the service sector. I don't think I've ever not been in the service sector. I try to do it as a business, and I'm horrible at business. And Lisa prefers a regular paycheck upon which she can depend. And she comes from the background that's like that. If you go in and you do the work that needs to be done, and you present yourself that way, you'll get a regular paycheck. And that's good. I get bored easy, and so I pound away at that stuff. Anyway, so yeah. Now I guess because I feel like that people need to have some gumption, and once you have some gumption, you start doing things, and especially if you start taking some opportunities, if opportunities present themselves to you, you take advantage of it. Good things will come to you, and things still work like that. I think it's quasi-natural. It's like the move from the Garden of Eden to being cast out of the Garden of Eden. Now, to a certain amount, you just have to. You have to work to be able to get what the Garden of Eden used to just give, naturally. And there's a lot of talk about, and I tend to think that it's honest and it's true, that we're going to be entering into a terrestrial world. Right now we're in a telestial world, which is Scrabble. Scrabble, Scrabble, Scrabble. You got to Scrabble to make it work. And the socialism come communism, I think, really ends up being kind of a desire for a terrestrial way of living. And so people say, well, I don't like socialism. And you go, you know what? I'm kind of a libertarian too. I want my freedom. Now, I'm more about freedom of time than I am about the freedom to get wealthy, which kind of works. I guess I kind of do that now. Anyway, and so when we try to come up with ideas and they end up trying to be treated like poverty programs and they shouldn't be, is the universal basic income is one of the ideas, which is really quite, quite interesting. I think it won't work in the United States for a few reasons, and I'll try to talk about them in the little time I have left. I've only got about half an hour left. And it's because of the social divide between the rich and poor, or between the oppressed and the oppressor. We've kind of recast that, and now even people who are rather successful are playing the game of, oh, I'm oppressed, you know, skin color, ethnicity, country of origin type of things create these weird problems. And I don't think America can really fix that. There will always be, deep in the heart of something, somebody saying, I need something more than somebody else does, so I need to get something that somebody else will not be getting, which is the essence of welfare programs, is that only a certain sort of person should be able to get these. Now, you can recast them and rename them and try to make them into something else, but that's really what they ultimately are. Reparations are basically poverty programs for black people, for slave reparations. And you're going, you know what, as far as I'm aware of, we have gotten rid of almost all. I can't think of any real obstacles besides individual people being bigots. I can't think of any particular way that black people are particularly oppressed anymore. In fact, they still get, getting rid of affirmative action is actually a positive thing for me, because it was encouraging people that really had no business going to college to go to college because it was paid for. In fact, while you were in college under affirmative action, along with other programs, it was the best form of poverty. And there's a lot of people who said, yeah, let's send all the poor people to college. That's a great idea. People saying that by and large, everything's kind of equal, that all people are basically the same, and that most poverty is caused by just not having resources. The sad part is that's not the main part of poverty. Even people who don't have things, if they hustle, resources will start coming. And so the kind of monetary poorness that a lot of people think about and say, okay, that's poor. If they just had money, things would be better for them. And you're going, the funny thing is, for so many people, that's not true. If you give them a ton of money, it's like people who win the lottery, primarily poor people in the past, have won the lottery because they were really the only stupid people who would actually contribute to it. They'd actually put a section of their income into this. So every time it got one, it tended to get won by people who were poor. And they would do really stupid things. Not all of them, but enough of them that it was a trend. It was a, what do you call it? I don't know if that is really a meme, but it's something that became stereotypical. And so, yeah. Whoa. Sorry. Old driving thing. I need to get past this person. I'm going too fast, honestly. Okay. These people would get all this money, and it's just and they would even say, you need to split this up monthly so you get a pension from it. And you go, yeah, that's better than just giving them the big lump sum. But would their lives get appreciably better? Some of them would. A lot of them, it wouldn't. Some of them had gotten themselves so far into debt that they would take the lump sum. Of course, they might pay down their debts, but for the most part, they would just behave badly, and they would still be in the same state they were, and the money would be gone. That's a bad thing. So there's my thoughts on poverty. I used to not have much money, but I took advantage of some opportunities, and I'm a reasonably good worker. I don't think I'm amazing, but I don't ask for the things that amazing would buy me. And ultimately I got to the place where I am now, where I'm making really quite good money. And I figured out what works for me. And it was a good thing. Very good thing. The universal basic income is a wonderful idea. It basically says that the government, or the people, the collective, and is it a form of socialism? Sure. And people go, oh, I don't like that. You go, it says it's not that bad a form of it. I think it's mostly a sop. I think I would enjoy the universal basic income really well. I wouldn't be surprised if it took the place of Social Security, which may not be a bad thing. at the end of the day, it may not be a bad thing at all. And that brings up one of the coming problems with this sort of thing, especially in the United States, where we don't have a tradition of having paid for government services like the European countries have, that everybody has to use. Everybody has to use them. And hopefully everybody gets treated the same, although I know in every case, rich people are given a more comfortable path than poor people are, and governments have an incentive to behave like that, usually because rich people tend to have more political clout than others. Okay. The universal basic income, the whole idea is that through this system, you would get a certain amount of money every month, like clockwork, a payment, however much it is, $1,000, $2,000. It would mostly be, you know, it's kind of a reverse head tax. It'd be a head payment. I think it's, well, anyway, and it's supposed to make it so that nobody is starving. Nobody's dying. Everybody has food and shelter. And they do it by giving you a certain amount of money. And it's been trialed a few times in a few places. I don't know any place where it's actually been made permanent, but I don't get out much. I only hear what media has to say, and media is, to be honest, a bad source of information. It's usually quite stinted, and it's quite it's more propaganda than anything else. And as long as you know that, I think you do okay. Too many people listen to this stuff as if they are the sources of accurate information, and one should never look at things that way. Since they're just, you know, silly. I hope that I am just another potential source of information. Hopefully I'm not telling you a story, but mine is somewhat jaundiced too. And I hope you take mine and you mix it around with other people's stuff and you go, ah, that's right. I would pay more attention to my writing than to my speaking, because I tend to speak off the cuff and I'm always going 1,000 different directions. I prefer my writing too. I don't like reading my own writing particularly. And it sounds really good. And the proponents, they don't talk about this much, because I think they want to keep the political ability to keep giving special privileges to groups in exchange for power. That's just too much of an enticement. Especially in the United States, where the only time you're going to get something from government is if it's trying to buy something from you, trying to buy your loyalty, trying to buy your vote, trying to get you to behave a certain way. That's really the only way these things work in the United States. So this would be something of a sea change for America. And that's why that I say, you know, it probably wouldn't actually work here. Because almost immediately after you created it, and the whole point is you create this and then you get rid of all of your welfare programs. You just get rid of all of them, including Social Security, I think. All of them would go down the pie hole in favor of this one thing that's supposed to give you sufficient money to have a basal lifestyle. Roof over your head, food in your tummy, little bit of play money, very little, stuff like that. It would benefit families in that this amount of money would be made available. Now, you'd probably want to give them less when you're under, I don't know, whatever the age of maturity is going to be now. I doubt very much people will say that 18 is a good age of maturity when you should get more money. 21 might be, who knows? Anyway, but come up with something. And that really would end up being that great separation between being a child and being an adult. Whether it's 18, it would probably go up to 21. I wouldn't doubt that 21 would qualify as the new extra, especially if you did kind of boarding school college, which I think is what ultimately will come to most of these things, is that if you go to college, your college experience will be pretty much paid for, stuff like that. Anyway, but that you would have to qualify for it, and depending on how much money was available is how many people would qualify for these things. You'd have to get a little more flexible than it is now. Anyway, universal basic income. That's kind of what I think is kind of the idea of what it would do. And do I have a problem with it? No. But no, I know, no, that the minute that you would try to take away any kind of welfare program, or once you wipe this away, it would all of a sudden, you would start getting the voices calling for the fact that certain groups need to get more than the UBI, or need to have a different UBI, different groups. Black people need to have a higher UBI than white people because white people do better. You know, they can go out and get their own work. You know, come on. There's been floating of doing this, but only doing it for the poor. And that comes with its own horrible problems. When I had little money, I had to make a conscious decision that I was going to stop being poor. Now, in certain ways, I couldn't be, because my son was on SSI, Matt, and we weren't allowed, while he was a minor, to have any significant resources. We could have a house, but we couldn't have two houses. We could have a car, but we could only have one car or two. We could have, you know, we could have up to $2,000 in the bank, but no more. That was what got us into more trouble, is we couldn't keep from having more than $2,000 in our bank account, and we kept getting dinged for it. And at some point, it just became, you know what, take the dang ding. Just don't worry about it. Or no, we kept doing it until Matt turned 18, and he transferred over to a system where it wasn't based on the family resources weren't there. And with UBI, there's too much of a temptation. Too much. I don't know how you would make it so that the natural tendency to say, oh, I feel bad for this people, let's throw some money at them. Oh, I feel bad for this, let's throw some money at that. That these situations would crop back up again. The biggest one is like I said, is that they would decide that really, really rich people shouldn't get the UBI. And it's like, but it's universal. Everybody gets it. Well, we would be able to do much better if people at a certain income level didn't get it. And it's very sensible. It's very sensible to say, you know, well, they don't need that extra little money. That's nothing. And you go, but then you set up that artificial line, and people will start living just under that artificial line, and they'll and that is a bad way to order your life, is to set some line and say, I've got to stay under this line no matter what. Even if I'm more successful, I can't take advantage of that success because it will screw with my thing. You know, I will lose that extra $1,500 a month that I like to see. And it will start delineating the new poverty. It just will. It's amazing. You'd think it wouldn't, but it absolutely would. It does it today. Whatever the poverty line is, let me tell you, almost everybody, in some sense, knows people who live off of poverty programs have a very lively sense of where their individual locality's poverty line is, and staying below it. And the more you crash it, the more problems it causes you. And you don't want to do that. So, and that's really where it comes down to. These are wonderful ideas. Poverty and doing a UBI to solve it. It might be a good thing, but you have to have the kind of restraint that the United States government, mostly the legislature, and the president, who likes to curry favor, which is why they shouldn't be popularly elected. You go, you know, the president, there was a reason why they came up with the Electoral College. And one of them is that the president should be influenced by votes and things like that. They should be beyond that. They should be above that or whatever. Now you can't say above it, probably beyond it. And, of course, our system doesn't work that way anymore. The Electoral College is a joke. Everybody who wants to get rid of it doesn't understand how much of a joke it's really become, in that it's whoever wanders by ends up being an elector, and that elector pretty much has to do what the voters tell them to do. So it's like, well, what's the point of that? Can't the Electoral College do something according to their own thought wave? And you go, no. So yes, it says, I have absolutely no faith in the existing U.S. government that they could take the UBI and do it correctly, which is you give it to everybody and you never stop giving it to everybody, and everybody gets it. It would have to be inflation adjusted, which is another thing that you can play with. And the temptation to play with it, to try to appease one group or another, to curry favor with one group or another, is beyond the legislative ability to overcome. The Supreme Court should be spending the bulk of its time trying to rein in an out-of-control legislature. That was one of the reasons why it was created, was to do that. And the fact that they consider themselves the court of last resort is sad, when they really should be you know, every single legislative bill that gets put through should be scrutinized and said, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. The system works because you have certain people who bring up lawsuits against it. It's very expensive. And so things that only end up being very politically valuable work. Oh, it's time to go. This is Jason Devereaux. You're listening to Cohen Meander. Let me leave you with the blessing of my fathers, the priestly blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift his countenance toward you and give you peace.